All right. Future Feast of Tabernacles. What am I talking about? Next year? Well, that'll be a future feast, but that's not specifically what I'm going to talk about today. Thursday night marked the beginning of what the world thinks is some kind of a strange festival, and what people that keep the most common calendar, the Jewish calendar, thinks we're doing something strange. They might understand the festival, but strange, you know, it was last month. What are you guys doing this month here? But it's called, according to the biblical calendar, it was the 15th day of the seventh month, starting at sundown Thursday evening. It's called the Festival of Shelters or the Festival of Tabernacles or the Feast of Tabernacles. It lasts for 7 days. The word in Hebrew is sukkot, which means huts or some kind of a temporary dwelling. And its meaning really is kind of close to almost like what you'd say is a, not the, I was going to say homeless shelter, but not the shelter with the big building and three stories. You know, if you've seen the homeless camps or, you know, just temporary, and they're not all cardboard. Sometimes they're tents, sometimes they're actual structures, but it's something, they don't have a place to go home and call home. So it's some transitional, temporary place where you can stay. A lot of times, the translators translate it tents, or tabernacles, or booths. And it can be anything from like a lean-to arbor, something that'll shelter you while you're worshiping God, starting on the 15th day of the seventh month on the biblical calendar. Now, this is one of the three ancient pilgrim feasts of Israel. We're not told a whole lot about it in the Bible. I mean, there's lots of verses, don't get me wrong, but there's not this huge section like a whole book called Booth, or even a whole chapter dedicated to, or a couple chapters, you know, okay, travel, this is what you do, this is how you do it, this is what. What is in there usually is centered around the temple, and there are some examples of, you know, the temple standing or the tabernacle before that. But that's usually what people center in on, is like the booth. And nothing wrong with the questions, valid and good questions. You know, can we stay in a motel room? Can we stay in a tent? Can we stay in a camper? Campers are pretty nice, you know. Some of those $80,000 fifth wheels and $250,000 motorhomes, or, well, I guess they're a lot more expensive. Last time I looked at it 20 years ago, the nice ones were $250,000. And I said, nope, not me. But anyway, I want to talk about the experience itself and something that's going to happen, something that's going to happen in the future. Because a lot of people talk about something that happened 3,500 years ago in the past, and that's important, and we should never forget that, and we should talk about that every year. I talked about some of that Friday, okay? But there's also something that's not talked about a lot, and so I guess I should, this is the place for the disclaimer. The views and opinions you are about to hear are not necessarily the views of our sponsors, the station. This is some opinion, and some of you probably will never have heard it before. Some of you have heard it before. Some of you agree with it. Some of you don't agree with it, and that's okay. There's not a chain on anybody's foot, and you know, let me use Herb as an example. Over the 31 years, I have grown to love that man. There are some things that Herb and I don't agree on, and we talked about some of them the other night, just touched on them. Well, you know, I sent you this paper, and Herb, I respect you, and I love you. And there's probably a whole lot more that he doesn't agree with on me, but I know that he cares about me too. And besides that, as special of a woman as Carol is, if she can love him and hang around him and all of these years, then he's got to be a special guy too, okay? So, but enough about the facetious stuff. This might be a little bit different. So if you've never heard it, I encourage you to go get your Bibles out and check it out. And if it's wrong, scratch it off your list. And if there may be something there, go ahead and dig a little farther, see what you can come up with. But every year in the fall, God's people are commanded to go out to this tabernacle experience. All right? And although we should never forget that original tabernacle, that original 40 years during the time of Moses where they were out in the wilderness, and lots of sermons and Bible studies can be done on that, and lots of information for us to learn. And really, one of the things that helps me, when I get frustrated or depressed, or sometimes somebody will say it to me, but if I can think long enough about, you know, you're mumbling and grumbling like the children of Israel in the wilderness. And when you really think about it, they were complaining and doing a whole lot of complaining. But they had everything that they needed. Their shoes. There was no shoe store. There was no cobbler to go make shoes. Their shoes didn't even wear out 40 years. Food. It's not like you had to go to work and do your job and get the money and then go down to the grocery store and then go out and prepare. It just came down from heaven 6 days a week. And then a blessing which went out. And just go out and gather what you need. And if it was a little short, it was enough. If it was a little extra, it didn't do you any good. And if you went out and said, well, man, I'm going to gather it all in today so I don't have to do it. You know, it's Monday and I might be busy Tuesday, so I'm going to go and gather 2 days. He taught him a lesson and say, it's going to rot. It ain't going to do you no good. Just a little bit, what you need, and it's the perfect food. Nobody took supplements. You get this, right? Nobody took supplements. But they got bored with it. Now, I don't believe it tasted nasty. Okay? Long time ago when I was laid off, I had a friend that owned a restaurant. And so I, 45 years ago, I went and delivered pizzas. You know, I put things in like a room and for mixing dough and stuff in his basement. And he paid me in pizzas because that's what I want. I said, no, I don't want money. I just want pizzas. And I want to come back and I want it free. And so we worked out a deal. You know, after a while, when I started delivering, and I could have a pizza anytime I wanted it, pizza, you know, oh, forget that. And they didn't call it this. They called it something else. But I said, let's go to KFC. And for those of you who don't know, that's kidney failure and cancer. Okay? People think it's Kentucky Fried Chicken. They just changed the name, but that's kidney failure and cancer. But I said, let's go to KFC and we'll, you know, anything but a pizza. So I understand the whole thing. If you take your favorite food and you eat it over and over and over, people get bored with it. It's like, oh, can't we have something else? And I never thought I'd get bored. I mean, this guy was from Sicily, and he, when we go to Wisconsin once a year, guess what? We go and get, you know, because it's a whole year in between. But back to this. This festival should remind us of these 40 years out in the wilderness with God protecting his children. Out in the desert, so you get this cloud in the daytime that gives them shade. And at night when it's cold, this pillar of fire. Now, I don't know that they did this, but anybody that's ever been around that pillar of fire, you're drawn to it, and it's like, you know, I've been camping a lot of times growing up, and you light the fire, and it's just, you get something from it, that heat, that warmth, and when it's the creator of the universe and your God. And during this time, he's speaking face to face, literally pale to pale, nose to nose, literally, to Moses. Nobody else at that. Clearly, no misunderstanding. Nobody that's going to have a dream and try and interpret the dream and, well, God gave me this. I see how God's given people dreams, but I see all of these dreams that people claim they have, they're not all from God. Let me let you in on a hint, okay? Trying to figure out, studying, looking, searching, researching. Moses could just ask him. It'll be like that again, you know. But till we get there. And everybody taken care of. For free. No charge. Come, fill, be nourished, healthy. You need water? Well, complain and grumble a little bit, but even the water is provided for. So let's take a look at Leviticus. Leviticus 23, starting in verse 39, it says, "Also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days." So yeah, this is really tabernacles or booths. It's also the feast of the Lord or Jehovah. Very often, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing. I know Lord is an English word, and when it's all caps, it's Yod Hey Vav Hey, the four letters of his name. I don't use it often, but it is, you know, I don't know that anybody really knows how to pronounce it right now. And there's all kinds of controversy and arguments and disputes. I don't use it, except sometimes in private prayer, more out of respect, because I'm not his equal. I don't call my physical father is still alive. He's 83, I think. I don't call him Gary, you know. So, but anyhow, not even to get into all that. If somebody does, hey, I'm fine with it. That's between you and God. But some don't know me, so I got a big, long explanation, but that's not for today. The Feast of the Lord, or the Feast of Jehovah. Today. This day. People say, well, why do you do this? What are you doing? Not even the calendar issues, just people at work, or your customers, or your neighbors, or your friends, or some of your families. You're going to do what? And you're going to go where? And why? When I talked Friday about rejoicing, what a better reason to rejoice. This is a feast, a banquet that God commands us to. Holy convocation. Some people get bored with me talking about this, but what does that mean? This is a summons from the judge, the supreme judge of the universe, to appear before him. Now, I find it really kind of interesting that people think that, you know, if you ever get a summons from a judge, now I know some people ignore them and they run and hide, but most people, they might be scared and tore up and. But if they get served with a subpoena, they show up. We've all been served with a subpoena to show up. He has set aside this time, called it holy, and created it, and says, I want you to come. I want you to rejoice. I want you to celebrate. I want you to fellowship, and I want you to worship me. And somehow Satan has some people convinced that this is a burden. Man, lay it on me, okay? Give me a double burden then, a triple burden. This is the feast of the Lord for 7 days. For on the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest. Oh, ain't that wonderful? Because getting here is a job all in itself. You need that first day. No grocery stores. No, oh, we got to go take care of this. We got to do that. It'll wait until tomorrow. And this year, well, it'll wait until tomorrow's tomorrow. Because it was Friday and then Saturday Sabbath. start out by forget the world. It ain't that important. You'll survive. And really, it doesn't matter. As far as maybe it would give us something to mumble and grumble about, but you didn't have enough food. Well, you know, it won't kill you. Maybe you didn't have enough of your favorite drink, whether it's alkaline water, distilled water, spring water, coffee, or some of the other things that people like. Say, well, all we got is water. Well, praise God. Nothing matters is really the point. We all talk about it on Dave Atonement, get rid of that food. Nothing matters. Nothing matters. We're going to start out by granting and giving you a break. Okay? Go take care of that other stuff. And I don't know if I got to go to Sam's today, tomorrow, but we got to go to Sam's, get more salad stuff. I didn't have to worry about it. Friday, Saturday, we were okay yesterday. Well, I got to find out. Mary's looking today, but we'll have to go back. But it was get rid of it, get out of the way. And even if we didn't have it, guess what? People will survive. Now, there would be some mumbling and grumbling, I know, but we'd all survive. On the first day, there shall be a Sabbath rest. On the eighth day, a Sabbath rest. And you shall take for yourselves on the first day of the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. And you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in a year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. Maybe I'm slow. I know I'm simple, but maybe I'm slow too. Did I miss it? Has forever come and gone? I didn't see it on a calendar anywhere. You know, like, okay, forever's over. Forever ain't come and gone. So this year we had to do things a little bit different, but we went out on Friday and we got the boughs and the leafy trees and others, we got some extra, and others got it. And I see a couple, or at least one sukkah, maybe two, I can't remember. And they were decorated with some of this. And I couldn't get a citron. It doesn't say you shall gather a citron, but it's a citrus-type fruit. And so I got some fruit while we were at Sam's on Thursday. And, you know, it was a mango or something. I don't remember what it was. But then Mike and Brenda found this. Or somehow got a hold of it.
Someone who kept these last month left it at the feast site in the people's place where it was at, thought of us knowing we're going a month later and gave it to us.
Okay, so somebody gave it to them. So while we're up here, I'll tell you something. Not even my interpretation, something I heard that makes kind of sense. Why does he tell you to take these four things and rejoice with them? What does that got to do with rejoicing? But I won't. It doesn't take that long, 5 or 10 minutes. Before the feast is over, I'll explain a common conclusion to that. But nonetheless, we're supposed to have these things, and somehow it's all incorporated into worshiping God. And I'm not talking about necessarily because, you know, that one word, that one tradition. See, that's what gets a lot of people. Anybody ever see Fiddler on the Roof? I've got the little section out of there, about a 2-minute-long section on tradition, where they ask him, well, why do you do these things? And then he goes into tradition and singing. I'm not talking about tradition, okay? Somehow, something it means, but to keep going on this, is in here, so I thought I'd talk about it for a second. It shall be statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. Doesn't matter. Jesus didn't end it when he came, when he was crucified. This is the commanded assembly forever. Verse 42, you shall dwell in booths for 7 days, and all who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths. Well, now it gets down to a little closer. A native Israelite should dwell in booths. It's commanded to dwell in the booths. What if you're not a native Israelite? We can talk about that at a Bible study or something else. But that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I'm the Lord your God. So here it is. You've got to do this so that you know that I'm the one that brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, right? He doesn't ever want us to forget that. That is the focus. You're doing other things and you have other things, but don't let the other things be your focus. The focus is that your generations, that your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and on may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I'm the Lord your God. That's 3,500 years ago. He's the guy that did this. That is the focus. Now, most of the world thinks the Feast of Tabernacles is about an event, if they think about it, that happened 3,500 years ago. And they'll try and figure out things that, you know, have some kind of connection to today from then. And there are things out there. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. That event 3,500 years ago has a connection to what we're all doing today. But to some other people, it has no meaning, especially kids. You know, if you tell them something happened 35 years ago, oh man, you know, that's like forever. 3,500 years ago, it's like, oh, who cares? All right? Even my granddaughter, 18 years old, she's a little smart aleck. She let loose with a comment about, I don't remember what it was, but it was like, you know, Grandpa, you're older than Moses type thing. But let's read about what Hosea says about some future forward event. Something that's going to happen, all right? Hosea chapter 12, verse 9 says, But I am the Lord your God. Ever since the land of Egypt, I will again make you dwell in tents. Again. Something future. Well, maybe it happened 2,500 years ago, right? Let's just keep going in a few other verses and we'll see. It says, I will again make you dwell in tents, as in the days of the appointed feast. So just like I made Israel dwell in tents, and today, 3,500 years ago, I will again make you dwell in tents, just as in the days of the appointed feast. Verse 10, I have also spoken by the prophets and have multiplied visions, and have given symbols through the witness of the prophets. So it tells us, you know, the prophets are talking about this. So where? Okay? And what is he talking about? Just this one verse, that's kind of hard to figure out what's going on. But this is talking about, and if you read everything in the verse in context, this is about a future event, okay? It's really a fascinating verse because it predicts a future time of restoration and the idea of, and I'm going to say it now and then we'll talk about it later as I go on, an Exodus 2 or Exodus the sequel, Exodus part 2. Everybody knows about Exodus. Every Passover we talk about it and we go through it. But when you, and it's a good thing to talk about at Passover, but when you get to the wilderness, now that's 40 years and, you know, most, well, that's tabernacles because they're out in the wilderness and booths and temporary dwelling. So it's still appropriate to talk about that event at the Feast of Tabernacles because that's what started the whole thing. What if I was going to tell you that I think that there's another Exodus type event in the future? And this is talking about it where people are going to dwell in booths. So let's go on. Let's look at Micah chapter 7, verse 14. It says, Shepherd your people with your staff, the flock of your heritage, who dwell solidarily in a woodland in the midst of Carmel. Let them feed in Bashan and Gilead as in the days of old. As in the days when you came out of the land of Egypt, I will show them wonders. So here he's telling them, you know, just like happened when you came out of the land of Egypt, there's something in future that's going to happen just like that. And yeah, from Hosea and from Micah, it's future from there. It's safe, you know, I think everybody can agree. Well, yeah, it wasn't fulfilled. It didn't happen there. This is a prophecy about something in the future. Now, before God's kingdom is established, we're told that wonders and miracles and signs will happen. I think that we're very close to seeing these things take place. I don't know how close. I just know close. I see things that the world is doing. And I'm not a prophet. But I see things that the world is doing that's getting very scary. And without God's intervention and protection, we're all going to be in trouble. And I think that's where the miracles are going to come. I've got people that I've met that are wonderful, that I've fallen in love with already. In fact, one of them, first day I met him, he came to services and I hear him talking to others, and I talked to him a little bit. And before they left, I said, "You don't sound like the typical person from California. What brought you to Tennessee?" And he looked at me, he says, "What caused you to move from California to Tennessee?" And he says, "We didn't move, we fled." Now, you can flee from one state to another, and some people are looking, and it's even come up in conversation, what country can we flee to? Because I think the United States as a whole is going down the tubes, and I don't know what country you can go to. There's none out there, you know. But my point is without God intervening, I think that's when we will see the miracles. And we will see miracles like originally happened. Not just, you know, with Pharaoh and Moses and the plagues. We will see huge, big miracles like that. Because I know that the government won't be successful and Satan won't win. We can all read to the end of the story and God wins, okay? And for God to win, miracles will take place. Everything, it can be something that really is fantastic, but simple things, like if you've never read a story, I read it 40 years ago, I've got it somewhere yet, it's called God Smuggler, and I believe it's by Sidney Sheldon. If you've never read that book, read that book. This guy was smuggling Bibles into communist countries, where if you were caught with five, one, you were going to the gulag, you were going to jail. If you were caught with five, it was a death sentence. And he had a little Volkswagen, and finally it got so much that, you know, he'd hide them in the tire and in panels, you know, the door panels, and the demand was so great. Finally, he had cases, boxes full of Bibles, and he had them on the back seat, and on the, he could hardly fit in the car and shift and drive this little Volkswagen Beetle. But there was cases of them, and he went through the checkpoint, and the border guards, they look in the car, and they don't see anything. They see the boxes. They open up a box and look, and he said, "Oh, this is it. I'm a dead man now. Five, and they'll kill you," and he had hundreds. You don't know what Brother Andrew opened that box up. You don't know what that guard saw, but it was not Bibles. That's what I had to do when I had to smuggle my rifle machine up into the hospital. I prayed that prayer that they wouldn't see what it was. They wouldn't understand and comprehend and throw me out. And God can do, and that's, for God, it's super simple. Everything from that to causing the perfect food, no supplementation needed, to call from heaven. He can have ravens bring it to us. I can imagine that. I just said, I'd say, "Well, that raven is an unclean bird. I'm not going to touch that." I don't know. I see people get really hungry. They go dumpster diving, you know. A raven, and it's clean. The food is clean anyhow. And see, the ravens will be able to trust us, the heathens out there. They'll probably try and grab the raven and eat the bird itself. But they'll be able to trust us. We'll pet it. And all right, back to this. Miracles and signs. I believe they're going to happen. I think we're close to seeing these things happen. God is going to return to Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 7. God is going to gather his people a second time. And I remember Charlie Kimbrough talking about end times, and he'd say, in our lifetimes, and we're going to see it. And I'd say, Charlie, you're getting, you know, this was 1987. Charlie, you're getting kind of old. You know, you're retired, you're on Social Security, your pension from McDonald's and Campbell Taggart. And unfortunately, he didn't make to see it. But for some of us, that can be a blessing, because there will be some hard times to go through. I don't want to go through them when I'm very old and it's super hard. So, next thing he knows is the trumpet sounds and the grave splits open and up he comes. But a future exodus, a future event. Let's read this. Jeremiah 23:7, it says, therefore, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that they shall no longer say, as the Lord lives who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt. Can you picture this now? I think everybody here, almost everybody here, keeps Passover. Can you imagine a Passover when it doesn't even come up about the children of Israel leaving Egypt? It tells us that there's something in the future. That's why I say it has not happened. It has not been fulfilled. Now I'm going to keep reading on, but think about this for a minute. Something is going to happen where that doesn't even come to mind. Now you're celebrating it, you're observing it. So what can it possibly be? If I piqued your interest, go on, go home, pull your concordance out, pull your Bibles out. There's more. They shall no longer say, as the Lord lives, who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt, verse 8, but as the Lord lives, who brought up and led the descendants of the house of Israel from the north country and from all the countries where I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. So this isn't from one place to take you out into the wilderness. This is from everywhere. This exodus, I believe, that's going to happen is going to be so big that it will overshadow. If you're going to sit down and you're going to talk about it, yeah, that happened, that's history, that was fantastic, and there were miracles and there were signs, and but where were you when this happened? Because it doesn't matter where we are. See, I think it's kind of funny, the Pentecostals and the Baptists, and they all think they're getting raptured off and going to heaven. And he's gathering them to do something. So what is this something that he's going to do? But I told you, we're going to dwell in booths in the future. What does it say here? And they shall dwell in their own land. So, let's go on. Look at what happens when he returns. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1. Some of this I'm going to read through verse 16. Very familiar. There's a couple songs in here that people know as we get to them. So these are not obscure, unknown verses that people don't read. They just don't read, I guess. Well, I was going to say they don't read the whole thing. Yes, we do. But I've read the whole thing in other places so many times. And then one day things just say, bang! And you say, where did that come from? I've read that 50 times and I've never seen this. It's one of those aha moments. Whether it's God says, okay, now you're ready for some more. Whatever it is, something that you've sang these songs, you know what these verses are. It says, there shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, and the Spirit of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord. And he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes. Anybody got any questions? Who's this talking about here? Pretty clear. It's our Savior. Nor decide by the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth and with the breath of his lips. He shall slay the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and the faithfulness the belt of his waist. The wolf shall also dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the goat. Now here everybody knows exactly. You can probably quote the rest of it from memory. The calf and the young and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young ones shall lie down together. The lion shall eat straw like an ox. The nursing child shall play by the cobra's hole. And the weaned child shall put his hand in the viper's den. This is paradise, okay? People, your neighbors, they all want to go to heaven, to go to paradise. You ain't got to go that far, okay? This is heaven on earth. This is paradise. Let's continue on. Verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Oh man, if that were only so today. But there's coming a time that the evil of the world is no longer going to exist, and it's going to change even the nature of the animals. If you see a young kid playing with a rattlesnake now, it's panic. Oh no! You can't just scream, because what happens if the kid does something wrong? So you want to say, just slowly put the snake down. It's panic time. Let's get real, okay? Even the animals are going to change. You can go play with the viper's den. You stick your arm in there and pull some out and play with them. Verse 10, and in that day there shall be the root of Jesse, who shall stand as the banner to the people, for the Gentiles shall seek him, and his resting place shall be glorious. It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again, the first time, right? Is that what it says? A second time, okay? To recover the remnant of his people who are left from Assyria and Egypt, from Pathros and Cush, from Elam and Shinar, from Hamath and the islands of the sea. And he shall set up a banner for the nations and will assemble the outcasts of Israel. So Israel is going to be gathered together. And gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. And also the envy of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not harass Ephraim. Let me just make a short statement. I'm not going to say this replaces the resurrection. It doesn't. The resurrection is an event, and it'll happen. This is something that happens outside of the resurrection. The question is, when does it happen? Does it happen before the resurrection? Does it happen after the resurrection? That's the resurrection, everybody understands. Well, not everybody in this room, I think, understands that. You know, Jesus returning, people will be resurrected, people will be changed that are alive and given immortal life. This is something talking different from that. And I think people just kind of want to mix them together so that it all fits in the way they've got everything all figured out. I know that's what I did. I said it because that's what I did up until a few years ago. Verse 14, but they shall fly down upon the shoulder of the Philistines from the west, and together they shall plunder the people of the east. Plundering? I've read about that before. They shall lay their hand on Edom and Moab, and the people of Ammon shall obey them. What's going on? Verse 15. The Lord will utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt. With his mighty wind, he will shake his fist over the river. Picture what's going on in Exodus 1, okay? About a wind and a sea. With his mighty wind, he will shake his fist over the river and strike it in the seven streams and make men cross over dry shod. Have you ever heard of that happening before? Yeah. Exodus. There will be a highway for the remnant of his people who will be left from Assyria, as it was for Israel in the day that he came up out of the land of Egypt. So even here it's telling, just like with Israel coming out of Egypt, this event is going to take place and it's going to be just like that. Except they're not all going to be coming out of one place. What's going on? There's no mistaking what's happening here. We're told that a second time God will gather his people together. Israel was led out of Egypt the first time. The second time he's going to gather them from the four corners of the earth. They're going to come to the land by crossing through the water, dry shod, just like happened through the Red Sea. So, Zechariah 14 predicts the time when the whole world will come to Jerusalem. Now, I know this is after Jesus, Yeshua, has returned and his kingdom is set up. But the whole world is going to be keeping the Feast of Tabernacles then. And we tell people, and I've told people multiple times, let me get this straight. We're supposed to observe it originally, and then we can forget about it. And then when he returns, we're supposed to observe it again. This is the guy that tells us he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He does not change, and something's wrong with that theology. But yes, the entire world, and this is the time to look forward to that. But there's also a time that I believe that there'll be another gathering of God's people. Zechariah 14, verse 16, it says, "And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." That's what we're doing right now, today. "And it shall be to whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain." Bad news. Famine, disease, sickness, starvation, death. "If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plagues which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So not only no rain, there's plagues. "This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." Well, I put this in there. It's important to God, and I know it's like preaching to the choir here. We're going to keep, everybody will observe it. Well, if we know that it's so important to observe in the future, what about now? And if we're doing this now, is there more meaning that it has for us? Let's look at Isaiah 33, verse 20. "Look upon Zion," its future. "Look upon Zion, the city of our appointed feast. Your eyes will see Jerusalem, a quiet home, a tabernacle that will not be taken down. Not one of its stakes will ever be removed, nor will any of its cords be broken." So when this is established then in the future, it ain't going nowhere. Now you can see forever means forever, okay? Verse 21. "But there the majestic Lord will be for us a place of broad rivers and streams, in which no galley with oars will sail, nor majestic ships pass by. For the Lord is our judge. The Lord is our lawgiver. The Lord is our king. He will save us. Your tackle is loosed. They could not strengthen their mast. They could not spread the sail. Then the prey of great plunder is divided. The lame take the prey, and the inhabitants will not say, 'I'm sick.' The people who dwell in it will be forever, or will be forgiven their iniquity." Nobody's sick. Nobody's hurting. We all gathered before we come up here. We had a prayer before the kids started singing in that. There are people that are sick. There are people that are hurting. Now let me tell you some shocking news. We're all dying. Okay? We all have a terminal disease, and we're dead men and dead women walking. That disease is called sin. Because of it, each one of us will die eventually. But we don't, you know, in the conventional form of dying, the worst part is getting there. I was talking with somebody here about this yesterday, and she brought it up, and I thought, man, that's what I tell everybody. You know, I ain't afraid to die. I've seen people die. I'm afraid of getting there. Nobody's going to be hurting. Nobody's going to be sick. Nobody's going to need anointing and prayer. The inhabitant will not say, I am sick. This is paradise on earth. And when this tabernacle is restored, it will stand forever. It will never be taken down. There'll be no sickness. Sins are forgiven. And it is heaven on earth. Now, there are lots of ideas on how we should observe this holy convocation, because it is a holy convocation. We're supposed to have fun, rejoice, and have a great time, but we're never supposed to forget what it's really the purpose of us doing all of this is for. Some people camp in tents. Others campers. Hotels, motels, sukkahs on the porches and decks and roofs of a flat-roofed house. And there's all kinds of ways that you can do this. Some will build a temporary shelter on their property somewhere. But that is not the issue. The issue is this is all temporary. Everything we think we've got and everything we think we're doing here, it can be gone in an instant. And we all get caught up. I get caught up in it, and I suspect everybody else does. We get caught up. He's a very rude and crude guy, and I think he's even dead now. But, you know, George Carlin did this thing on stuff. And it was really, if you've never heard it, it's about everybody's got stuff. And a lot of us got so much stuff that it's hard walking around in our house because of the stuff. And so what do? We go and buy more stuff, buildings, and put it on our property. And then we take some of the stuff and put it in those buildings. And then, you know, I've got one place, a rental, that will never be rented. You know why? Well, first, I'd have to do way too much work on this one to rent it. But I got a lot of stuff in it, you know. That stuff doesn't matter. And some of it, I guarantee you, I haven't seen in 4 or 5 years. When I know, well, wait a minute, I got that over in the trailer. Let me go find it. I could spend a half an hour looking for the stuff. Sometimes it's easier to just go out and buy more stuff to replace it. It's cheaper than spending a half an hour looking for this tool that I need to do this. But all of that really doesn't matter. The richest people in the world that got a lot of stuff, when they're dying, it doesn't matter. Well, if they're in their right mind. Some of it are worried about who's going to fight over their stuff, but they can't take it with them. Got a little cartoon. I should have put it up there. It's a hearse with a trailer behind the hearse. It's on the way to the graveyard, and there's a whole trailer full of stuff hooked to the back of the hearse, you know? It's really the way some of us, and we're all guilty of it to some extent, we live. That's not important, is my point today. That stuff is meaningless. Don't forget what really counts. First of all, our Savior and our Father. That's the most important. Number two, your family. Your family. That's what counts. Last night, we're talking about somebody in our family that a lot of you know is dead. He's died. He had 4 children. His greatest wish was that his children would have what he found. A lot of you know Tommy. He was here until he got too sick. He couldn't come anymore. The first time it was in the early 90s. Well, we'd only see you in June when you come up here once a year. You guys got some really good rates down in Florida. Can we come down to Florida? Now, we're not interested in the meetings. Now, Linda was. She wanted to come, and, you know, she went to church every Sabbath, and he wasn't. But Tom is like me. He's cheap. And he saw them rates, and he says, I can never go to Florida cheaper than what we can go here. Made it clear, not going to see me at the meetings. That's not what I'm there for. We'll get together after your meetings, and we can do things. But those, he kept on talking about the rates. And over time, over the years. And then one year at Cumberland Mountain State Park, there was a big change in Tommy. It's the music for him that drew him in. God used it and changed his heart. He started out by he'd come and film some of the fun shows with his video camera. And he had a good time. And so every once in a while he'd come for a Sabbath. But then over time it increased and increased. And when he got home, he called up their Seventh-day Adventist minister. And he went to one of their series, the prophecy series. And the guy that came through and did that baptized him there. But from that time on, his kids that weren't going to church, they couldn't get away from him. And the further along, you know, cancer, and they destroy his thyroid, and he's suffering, and he wants them to have what he found. He wants his children to know, because he knows if they can get a relationship like that, doesn't matter what else happens out in the world. Doesn't matter what challenges are, they'll be okay. They will be okay if they can fall in love like he fell in love. That's what counts. But see, to even want that for your children, you have to have that yourself. How are you going to teach your children? How are you going to help your spouse? You know, those that have a spouse where both the husband and wife, and they're studying this together, that is such a blessing. Because there's so many times where one or the other sees it. And the pain and confusion and friction and problems that causes. But you got to have it to be able to show your children. Now, God can do a miracle, and he can kind of shove you out of his sight if you're just really reprobate and reach in. But to be able to grow up in a godly home and know that there's something better, because at a certain point, everybody gets out there in the world, and Satan and all of his temptation, and mom and dad aren't right there, and they don't know what you're doing, and sometimes kids get caught up in that, or young adults, or sometimes even it takes a long time, and they're old adults before they finally, something clicks, and they remember, there's a better way. I want that for me. And sometimes they have kids. And they look down at that little baby that they've had, and they realize, you know what? I need to change. God uses our children to change us. That's the experience. It's not 3,500 years ago. It's not even, you know, someday way off when Jesus returns and sets his kingdom up. And, you know, even though I think it's not way off when, I'm certainly not going to, it's not like tomorrow or 5 years from now, but it's in the future. And I think the vast majority of people that are in this room are going to be alive, and possibly everybody that's in this room will be alive when it happens. And it's applicable for us today. It means something for each and every one of us today. And whether it's adults going out for parents' night out on Tuesday night, or kids going, we need to do some stuff, some of outings, events, the teens. So please, Ask your kids. You know, there's so much that we can do for them. In the past, they've done miniature golf. They've done the jet boats where you go up some of the little waterways and chase alligators. And but there's so much glass bottom boat. There's so much to do. We need to make sure that everyone. And if you just see somebody sitting there by themselves and they look like they ain't having a good time, I talked about Friday, sit down and talk to them. Become a friend. Love each other. Remember, if we don't hang together, we'll hang separately. Satan's busy and he's out there. But it means something for us today. This celebration really is looking forward to a time, not only peace on earth, but miracles, wonders, signs, protection. And when it happens, please, I'm talking to myself here. Don't get like the children of Israel and mumble and grumble and complain. Think about everything. We read those, and a lot of people have made comments, including me. How could they be so stupid after everything they just saw? You know what? We are the children of Israel. We're stiff-necked, hard-headed. Don't get like that. Don't let Satan come between you and your relationship. Rejoice! Thank you.